This is the Mike Garrigan Podcast.
Welcome to episode 12 of 24 in the Transitions Podcast series from MikeGarrigan.com. My name is Mike Garrigan. June 2nd, 2016. The Homeowners Association sent a general notice to the community that we all should make a concerted effort to keep our shrubs trimmed, our weeds pulled, yards edged, and lawns mowed. And, things have to get pretty out of control to get a sanction for violating that covenant. But even so, I like to comply with these, notices as best I can. That being said, our natural area beds in our around our home have gotten a bit haywire with weeds growing profusely and not much time to tend to them. And today I focused about 2 hours on stripping the natural beds of weeds, pine straw, and debris, mulching the good stuff, discarding the bad stuff, and raking everything into a relative harmony. And then I sprayed weed preventative over the beds. I also thought it would be a good idea to trim the hedges and bushes. The nandinas always look good, and the barrier shrubs aren't too hard to shape. The bush that has given me trouble over the years is our azalea bush. When I approached the azalea on the first pass, I noticed that it was anchored quite well to the ground. Its roots ran deep, and there was no simple way of just pulling the azalea out. And when I looked closer, it seemed to have plenty of healthy brush in the center of the plant, and the fringe and the peripheral branches were dead. I pruned away about half of the plant, pulled the entwined weeds from the fray, and took a good look at it. I could save it. If I watered it, kept it under close watch, chances are it would survive my years of neglect. I know better than to underestimate Mother Nature. What would help me to create a bond with the azalea would be for me to give it a name. I guess I also miss taking care of my dog, and if I think of it as a living, breathing creature, this azalea, I might be more likely to take better care of it. And so I named our azalea bush Francis. Francis seems to be in better shape now than he did before I pruned him. He looks, he looked pretty ratty, but now it looks like he has a chance. June 4th, 2016. Francis has made progress. New leaves are forming on formerly barren branches. That seems like progress to me. The azalea is a member of the rhododendron genus, but are more a subsection of the rhododendron. True rhodies, as they are called, are tall shrubs that sometimes grow as high as 90 feet tall. Azaleas are false rhodies in that they are much smaller and carry both a different horticultural and symbolic purpose. In terms of their cultivation, the azalea thrives in acidic soil that isn't overly moist. One of the ways to promote acidity in soil is to surround the azalea with either pine bark or pine straw. And this tilts the composting away from the alkaline toward an environment in which the azalea can thrive. I always thought that people use pine straw in their natural beds only for looks, but it turns out that it has a nurturing effect. We find the azalea throughout the world. Different countries assign a different meaning to the plant. In its native Japan, the azalea was a memento of home. In Victorian society in the U.S., the azalea, when delivered to an enemy in a black vase, was considered a death threat. The azalea's leaves possess andromedotoxins, which are usually not fatal in humans, but are dangerous for animals. Although, when the toxin finds its way into honey, it can take on hallucinogenic properties. Today, the azalea also takes on an official capacity, being the focal point of many garden festivals throughout the world, as well as being the symbol for the city of São Paulo, Brazil. I think pruning Francis, having pine straw over his roots, and keeping the natural bed well-drained has helped his rehabilitation, and the pruning probably helped the most. June 6th, 2016. Small leaf buds are forming on Francis. This is promising. When I took down our privet, just to a few sticks, I mean, basically took all the foliage off of it, I saw a similar response after a fresh pruning. Watering daily continues even in the wake of the frequent rains. I really don't want Francis to dry out. Why did I name him Francis? I think there are two reasons. First, the responsibilities I had for caring for a non-human life died with Lord Smithfield. Smitty was a good dog, and anthropomorphizing a plant helps a bit. I'm not talking to it or anything. I guess the Francis tag just makes it easier to remember to take care of him. The second reason I named him Francis is probably a subconscious allusion to St. Francis of Assisi, one of the most beloved saints in the Catholic canon. Although I should mention that, personally, my favorite saint is St. Blaise, who afforded one of the strangest Catholic school traditions on St. Blaise Day. St. Blaise of Sebastia, which is now the region known as Turkey, was a physician of sorts in the late 3rd century, early 4th century. He was known for healing several varieties of human ailments and was thought to have had worked miracles, enough so that the church could recognize him as a saint. In the early 4th century, Emperor Licinius of the Roman Empire sent a decree to his local governors to persecute Christian leaders. Blaise was taken, interrogated, tortured, imprisoned, and eventually beheaded. However much we all gripe about the U.S. judicial system, hearing a story like that makes me appreciate our due process rights. Incidentally, Licinius is said to have co-authored the Edict of Milan, which is kind of strange because it called for empire-wide tolerance of the Christian peoples. Although his co-author, Constantine, would crush Licinius not 10 years later at the Battle of Chrysopolis. Back to St. Blaise, 400 years after his beheading, a document called the Acts of St. Blaise emerged to include details of his many miracles. The one that stands out, for some reason, is the one where Blaise was arrested by the governor of Cappadocia, and a mother threw herself at Blaise's feet, and the mother told Blaise that her daughter was choking on a fishbone, and she asked him for an intercession, and he said a few prayers right there as he was being dragged off to be tortured, but the child subsequently healed, and being so, St. Blaise is thought to be able to intercede for protection and healing of ailments of the throat. So on St. Blaise Day at St. Pat's, where I went to elementary school, we would all miss, you know, 2 or 3 morning classes in order to attend the school-wide church service, which was also open to all parishioners in the community. It was a basic daily mass with a specific variety of blessing at the end, and here the priest held 2 fully lit candles in a crossed position and placed the intersection directly on each participant's throat, and then the priest gave a St. Blaise blessing, which asked God at the intercession of St. Blaise to keep the participant free from throat infections and any other sicknesses. If I recall, I think for liability purposes, the candles were unlit for the students. That makes sense. You know, among the 5th graders, you can imagine a variety of choking jokes as I remember back. I don't really recall any zingers other than the choking sounds as one said, St. Blaise Day, you know. But what's interesting about St. Blaise is that in the 14th century, in response to the Black Death, a terrible plague, people turn to prayer as their only hope against imminent fatality, and 14 of the patron saints of healing developed what was called the cult of the 14 holy helpers. This is a real thing. And the church recognized these 14 patrons as saints who could especially pray and intercede for favor for public situations. The 14 are Agathias, the patron saint of headache; Barbara, the patron saint against fever; Blaise, the patron saint against illness of the throat; Catherine of Alexandria, the patron saint against sudden death; Christopher, the patron saint against the Black Death; Cyriacus, the patron saint against temptation on the deathbed; Dennis, another patron saint against headache; Erasmus, the patron saint against intestinal ailments, including dysentery; Eustace, the patron saint against family discord; George, the patron saint for the health of domestic animals; Giles, the patron saint against plague for cripples, beggars, and blacksmiths; Margaret of Antioch, the patron saint for the escape from devils and for good childbirth; Pantaleon, the patron saint for physicians and against cancer and tuberculosis. But this must have been retroactive, because neither cancer nor tuberculosis were known things in the 14th century. And Vitus, protection against epilepsy and lightning. Does praying to a saint work? Well, I don't know how that stuff works. I'm just me. But what I do know is what William Paley said when he said, quote, "There is a principle which is a bar against all information, which is proof against all arguments, and which cannot fail to keep a man in everlasting ignorance, and that principle is contempt prior to investigation." I should note that this quote is often misattributed to Herbert Spencer. I should note also that there is no record of a case of strep throat at St. Pat's from 1985 to 1988, and such records probably don't exist anyway, but I don't recall getting any throat ailments until after I began missing St. Blaise Day.
You were far away, so Thanks a lot, everybody. We'll see you next time, August 13th, right here on stageit.com. You know where to find me, mikegarrigan.com. See you then.
June 7th, 2016. This journal has undoubtedly helped me to remember to water Francis. I also water Nelson, our indoor plant. He was named Nelson months after the Simpsons character. But one of the more interesting things about St. Francis is that the prayer that is most often attributed to him, known as the prayer of St. Francis, is a misattribution. The prayer first appeared in 1912 in La Clochette, a French spiritual magazine published by La Ligue de la Sainte Messe. It was printed with no attribution and was most likely an anonymous composition by the editor of the magazine. The prayer circulated throughout a few European countries until the early 1920s, when it was printed again on the back of an image of St. Francis with the title Prayer for Peace. Eventually, the prayer was translated into English and found its way onto a 1936 publication called Living Courageously, which directly credited St. Francis with the prayer. And by the time of World War II, the prayer had circulated as the Prayer of St. Francis, and no one seemed to notice or really care about the misattribution, because basically the prayer reflected the principles by which St. Francis lived. St. Francis was born Giovanni di Pietro di Bernardin, I think that's right, either in 1181 or 1182. The medical records weren't digitized back then, so it's kind of hard to say, but St. Francis is probably the most venerated of the saints because of his radical interpretation of the gospel, his foundation of one of the longest running monastic orders, and having been one of the first recorded people to receive the stigmata, which is when the wounds of Christ's passion appear on the stigmata. Usually it's considered a bona fide miracle, although in 1987 a medically sound theory appeared that purported that St. Francis may have unfortunately contracted leprosy, which would explain the sores on his hands and abdomen. Still, that doesn't mean that he couldn't have received the stigmata. I mean, we all know from Batman, the Riddler is not the Joker, nor is he the Penguin. So even if the stigmata didn't occur in Francis, his life was quite a testament of good and rightfully deserves recognition, if not veneration. And while preparing to go to war in the early 13th century, Francis, he had some kind of vision that called him to return home and live a life of poverty. And that was quite a change for Francis, because he was from a wealthy family. And later he founded the Franciscan Order, which observes a strict rule of strict rules of poverty, chastity, and obedience. And the individual rules have come and gone throughout the years, such as being forbidden to ride on horseback, but generally all branches of the Franciscan order seek true humility and are called to serve the least well-off of society. The original order of Franciscans became known as the First Order. I wonder if there was a Franciscan priest who found himself watching Star Wars, The Force Awakens, and either took issue or had a concern with the bad guys being called the First Order. I wonder if they even knew about the film, that is, if they all the time are ministering to the least of society. But what if a Franciscan was, say, serving to a youth group or a shelter where someone was watching The Force Awakens, and the Franciscan sees the opening crawl implicating the First Order as the enemy? I think he wouldn't care. I'd like to hear what he had to say about that. Francis was also known to be the patron saint of ecology. He loved animals, plants, and even disease, which he greeted with open arms and love. June 12th, 2016. Francis has made substantial progress over the past few days. Reading about the life of St. Francis has called me outdoors a bit more than usual. On last Wednesday, I took a long walk on the Bicentennial Trail near my house, and the full bloom of the trees told me that summer is almost in near effect, although technically summer is still a couple weeks away. Last time I had walked the Bicentennial Trail was with Smitty, and today I was able to move much faster, and that reminded me of how slow Smitty was getting in his final weeks, and we used to trot along that trail at a pretty good tick before he fell ill. I returned to the trail on Saturday morning, this time on the instruction of my physical therapist, who I hope will help me rehab my lower back a bit. My mission was to go running. She actually assigned me, go running before our PT session, so I jogged 2 miles in about 11 minutes, which is pretty slow, but still sufficient to see if any pain develops before my PT session. And the stage at show on Saturday evening was really fun, really well played, but I gotta say it was fairly poorly attended in spite of a good effort of promotion. And the summer stage at shows are often the lightest in terms of the crowd, and, you know, it's summer after all. There's baseball games, and I think King's X was in town that night, so, but anyway, I played 8 songs from The Promise of Summer, my 2002 album, and I followed that little set with a new song and an old Collapsus B-side. It seemed fitting. Making an effort to save a plant has been worthwhile. Francis has not been a substitute for the loss of Lord Smithfield, but helping Francis heal has widened my perspective of life that's all around us. I learned about soil pH, watering, and pruning, and being a custodian of life, however seemingly insignificant that life might seem, has fostered in me a greater compassion for life, as well as a sense of humility. Aside from the complexities afforded by consciousness and self-awareness, Francis has a complexity and a vitality that is not completely dissimilar to my own. When I pass Francis in the morning and in the evening, I am reminded of the prayer of St. Francis, and the prayer asks for the strength to be the good that the world needs. It directs us to console others, to love everyone, and to seek understanding of all that's around us, and it shows us that the only way out is through. I hope I remember to water Francis tomorrow. The Mike Garrigan Podcast is brought to you by MikeGarrigan.com.